good evening, everyone, and thank you. I'm a couple minutes late. I was in having dinner with Ramona, and glanced up at the clock. It's been a wonderful day of coaching again. This is always our most exciting day. It was a 4 o'clock start this morning, and so this is the wonderful ending to a fabulous day. I'm hoping everyone who's on the call with us this evening is ready to take on their lives. Before we start tonight's conversation, is there anyone that would like to share experience that they had during the holiday season based on the use of any of the skills they've been attaining, such as intrinsic validation or staying present in the now or using their mind constructively? Anyone would like to share? Oh, it sounds like we have a quiet group today. Oh, Lincoln, are you with us?
I'm here.
Very good. Lincoln and I were having a conversation this afternoon, and he started asking me several questions. And I said, you know, it might be helpful, Lincoln, if we came on the call, and we just asked those questions, and I'll do my very best to answer them. Lincoln was saying this. He said that quite often we talk about principles and practices, but he would like to see us get, in this call, write down to some practical application of how to use these principles in daily activities, particularly in business building activities. So we're going to turn this over to Lincoln. He's got several questions that he's been formulating this afternoon, and we're just going to address them spontaneously this evening. And if anyone who's on the call is inspired by a question or has one they would like, just jump on the call. Just say hi. Just call your name. Just call my name. Say Dave, Dave, Dave. And I will come on the line and acknowledge that you're there, and then go ahead and ask your question. So, Lincoln, let's start with you.
All right. As you know, Dave, we've spent the last year building something and creating something, and during that time I've had an opportunity to learn from you and to be taught by you, and I've come to some realizations that what comes so natural for you is more difficult for me. You oftentimes will come up, I'll come up with an idea or a solution, or I'll have an idea about something that I would like to implement, and you just start asking me questions that I hadn't even considered or thought of. And I just sometimes think that I understand the theory well enough, but I get a little bit flustered and a little bit uncomfortable when I take that theory into the real world. One of the things that we talked about today, you and I have talked many times about theory, principles, and practices, and that's all well and good, but until we actually put it into practice, it doesn't really help us out. And so I've worked, as you know, developing my ability to create like a creator. And so I know that I face obstacles in that. It's a daily opportunity for me to grow as I learn to think like you think. So I just wanted to, as we were talking today, we started talking about some of those things. And I know that one of the things that we had talked about before was something is as light as a Thanksgiving dinner, that we can create an experience at that Thanksgiving dinner. If you could talk a little bit about your experience this past Thanksgiving from a standpoint of sometimes, you know, for me especially, I've been thinking I've got to create business, and it's not just about that, and maybe we can practice in other less dangerous places or scary places for people, things that for me would be a scary place to be.
Okay, and I want to make sure as we go through this discussion that we're not trying to say, Dave, you've got this mind we'd all like to replicate. That's not the case, because I get asked all the time, what's it like to be in control of your thoughts? And my response is always, I don't know. Because we're just trying to take these principles, and not just trying, we are taking these principles and applying in our lives. And as you know, Lincoln, sometimes I'm better at it than other times, especially when we're in the middle of a firestorm. I'm human. But I will share with you a couple of things in terms of the last Thanksgiving weekend. And as I do so, I would ask those who are listening to think about some of those pivotal moments that they faced during the holidays when they stepped into someone's world or asked a question that perhaps they might not have before. And then we've got we've got the holidays coming up with Hanukkah and with Christmas. Many more occasions for us to apply these principles. So I'm going to share just two thoughts of things that happen in preparation for Thanksgiving about using our mind five constructive ways. Inspiration, exploration, planning, goal setting, problem solving, these constructive ways. I just want you to imagine for a moment, we were talking with a coaching client about this today, that if we're driving down a road and if the road tipped to the left, I just want you to imagine that. I've got my hands out in front of me like they're flat, and then I'm tipping them to the left like I'm banking on a corner in the Indy 500, except for it's a straight road. And then I wanted this person to imagine it's covered with ice. And if we slide off the road down here on the left-hand side is this burrow pit, I think they call it, where all the dirt and bushes and trees, we get lost down in there. This is that dark void of fantasy and catastrophe and counterfeit pleasure. And as we're driving along, we kind of want to keep sliding into this place. And we've just conditioned ourselves that when something starts to happen, we just shoo, right down in there, and we wallow in all of that fear and anxiety. And when we're here, we can't get inspired ideas. We can't get impressions. We can't get solutions to problems. So our goal is to say, as we've talked about before, I'm not going there. Not going there today. And I remember the week before Thanksgiving, having a moment of mental rehearsal, and just sitting here in this chair where I'm sitting right now, and imagining the family gathered together. We were going to have six of our children with their spouses and 14 grandkids up at the cabin for Thanksgiving. One was in California with his wife's family. And this is going to be a great occasion for us all to be together. And what could I create? How could I create that? How would this serve? What could we do to make this an exceptional event? What could I do to add? So I went down a list of things that I... And I want you all to think about this in terms of your holidays. What do I have that I could offer? What I could offer sounds strange with my family. We've talked about these principles now for decades. We have this new assessment, intentional creation. I could have those who would like to take the assessment, and then I could block out time during that 3 or 4 days we're together and sit down with whoever would like to and review their assessment. So we put out the offer the week before. Anybody would like to, we'll block out the time. Well, we had an overwhelming response. It was very exciting. And we spent much of Thanksgiving in between playing games, etc., and sometimes late into the night in the room, in our bedroom, the master suite, with one of my children or a son-in-law or daughter-in-law, stepping into their world using this assessment. And you know from having gone through your own assessment experience that you can get into a very sacred space. And in that space, talk about things that are otherwise difficult to talk about. Walls are down. Conversations can occur. Questions are asked. Answers can be given. It was absolutely precious to be able to stand and give a son-in-law a hug and just hold him and have him hold you and just say how much love they feel and how much love I feel. We got to the end of this holiday, and everybody was saying this was the best holiday we'd ever had together. And then they said something that was both very interesting and very revealing. They had a workout on Saturday morning with all the women, and after the workout, they're all sitting down in the family room having this conversation, and it was relayed back to me by Ramona and by each one of them as they were leaving that they had talked about that this was their favorite weekend ever, and it's because the way Dad showed up. And when I heard it, I was deeply moved that we had intentionally created an amazing weekend together time. This question gets asked. How had I not been showing up in the past? What was different about this? It had not happened ever before. Because when I get into this cabin with 26 people, if everybody shows up, there's 32 of us, and our oldest grandchild is 10 years old. The oldest one there this weekend was 8, and there were 14 of them. So you can just imagine how it could get if you ever wanted to have any quiet sanity, you know, in the time we're all together. It was letting go of, because I go there to relax sometimes too, just to be, except for this time I made the decision to go there and show up. I share that with you so that you can think about this holiday season how you could show up differently. We were sitting at the table on Thursday. On Tuesday of this last week, I was doing a mental rehearsal about what we could do to serve. What could we do? How would this serve? What could we create? And I envisioned, mentally rehearsed, I could see at the end of this wonderful Thanksgiving dinner, inviting all the men to do all the cleanup and the dishes and to have the women go relax for a minute while all the kids took a nap. We got toward the end of the dinner. I said, gentlemen, can I have your attention, please? How about if we give our wives a break? Go put the kids all to bed and take a nap and let them just go play some games and let's clean up the kitchen. Everybody said, yeah. We had the meal. And not only that, but for those of you who prepared the meal, we had such an appreciation for what it took to prepare that meal by the time we finished all those pans. This was an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half, with seven people involved, just to get this cleaned up. What an amazing thing. And the conversation we had, the things we shared, the plans we made for the rest of the weekend, very exciting time together, intentionally created. I'm excited, not to boast about what I created, but that I caught a vision. I'm inviting you to catch this holiday. More than so than you ever have before. You got Betty's letter. Many of you have read it. Let us show up differently in people's lives. And when we do, we make a difference. I had a daughter who just held me before she left and wept because of what happened when we did her assessment debrief, what had happened in the event, her children, the experience, the connection I had with her husband. I'm going to share something very private. This is a man who is just brilliant. Top of his class, he's a DEA agent, working toward becoming an FBI agent. Just so well read, so articulate, and he thought I was judging him, and I probably shouldn't even be telling you this on a recorded call, but he was feeling less than. And the truth of the matter is, I was intimidated by him. When I shared that with my daughter, she laughed. She told him that night. And the next day, he and I had a connection, unlike all the time they've been married for years with two grandkids. He and I connected so richly and so deeply because he knew that I loved and respected him and stood in awe of this amazing young man who puts his life on the line every day as an undercover DEA agent with two small children. Just an amazing thing. Disciplined, follows the books to the rule, or follows the law right to the letter so he doesn't get himself in trouble. Just an amazing human being. These moments that we could create this holiday season, everybody on this phone could. All we want to do is take the very principles we're teaching. If there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. Mentally rehearse. Live your, if you're going to have a Christmas dinner with everyone, imagine the Christmas dinner together. Just be there as vividly as you drive that Ferrari you might fantasize about or that summer cottage you might fantasize about by the ocean or by the lake. And just be there and see what you see. Oh my goodness, you'll get ideas. You'll get inspired ideas. Then you simply act on them. And when you act on them, they'll validate for you they were inspired to begin with. And two, you will touch people's hearts in a way that you have always longed to do so. You'll have connections with people and family members you may not have had connections with for a long, long time. I just witnessed what's possible. I can't wait for the next gathering this holiday season. May you do the same thing this holiday season. Really take this on and feel this and live these principles. So, Lincoln, that can be applied to business, to a meeting where you got a meeting with someone tomorrow, and we just go there and live the meeting. Experience it in your mind the same way you experience that beautifully decorated home with all those amenities, and you can explain in detail the temperature of the tile on your feet or the swimming pool or whatever it might be. Live that meeting with the same vividness, with a burning desire to bless the life of the person you're meeting with, and you find out what you learn. What impressions come to you, and then follow them, trust them. Even though they may seem insignificant, even though they may seem a little goofy. I had an impression we're sitting there having dinner on Friday night, and we've got 8 kids at the bar there in the kitchen. And one was whining, and one was crying, and the other one was pushing the other one, just like little kids will be, you know? And I had this impression. I thought, that's really silly. No, no, I'm going to follow the impression. So I went, I stood on the other side of the bar, and I said, okay, everybody follow me. And I started tapping like a drum on the counter. All the adults stopped and turned around. And then there was one little mopey kid down at the end, Adam. I said, Adam, come on, join me now. Then I added a beat to it, and they added a beat to it. Even the little teeny ones were trying to do it. And pretty soon we were just drumming away on the counter, having a good time. Then, yay, throw your hands in the air. And everybody was finally connected and ready to have a meal. The craziness had gone out of them. Crazy little silly impression. Let us listen to those. Let us not be stuck. Just pull the cork out. Pull it out this holiday season and be alive. Be available. Step into people's worlds. Create something special. It'll be the best Christmas present, the best Hanukkah present, the best Thanksgiving present you can give anyone to show up like that. I can promise you that given the choice of a present or showing up in that style, they would take show up every time. Show up. Keep your presence. Just show up. Well, Lincoln, I'm on a soapbox. Back to you.
You know, you make it sound so natural. And as you know, I've tried to put into practice over the course of the year, really try to practice that, but it feels oftentimes awkward for me. Are there times when you felt that it's awkward, or you've talked with people that it's awkward, and what do they do to get through the awkwardness?
It is awkward. It's like when I went back to the gym to work out 8 weeks ago, Jeremy Wardle, my trainer, and I used to competitively lift weights when I was in high school. And this thing down here at my belly used to be up here at my chest, you know. And he has me working out. Fortunately, he's been pushing me, but you get on the bench press, and that which I used to warm up with was impossible to even lift. It's uncomfortable. It feels awkward. I feel uncoordinated. Now, the next day I show up, and we do another exercise. And then the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. It's doing the exercise every single day, and with every day it got easier. We raised the weight. I got more comfortable with it. I can't wait to go and sit in that gym now and pump that iron. You know, Mondays, legs, Tuesdays, shoulders, Wednesdays, chest, Thursday, bicep, triceps, Friday, just some good cardio, an exercise regimen where these muscles are coming alive, and I'm coming alive, and it's becoming easier. You start losing a few pounds and a few inches in your waist, and the chest starts to harden up a little bit, and my sweetheart absolutely notices it and kind of excited about this, and all of a sudden, it's becoming more natural. But there is a point in the process when we begin. We have been using this muscle to slide off the road to the left and into the barrel pit. That place we can do so easily. We can catastrophize all day long. We're masters at it. Worry, fear, anxiety, fantasy, catastrophe. We could do that with absolute ease. That is easy for us. How many of you on the phone could drive along and just slide right into that comfort zone without a problem? Just think about it. That's easy to do. And it's so vivid. It is so vivid that we turn molehills into mountains in a moment. Our body's coursing with cortisol and adrenaline and fear dendrites, and we're overwhelmed and incapable of handling difficult situations. We're in chaos, and we do it so easily. All we're doing is taking that gift to do that awful thing so vividly and redirecting it. The muscle I had to eat food is now being used to lift weights, so to speak. Now I'm going to mentally rehearse with it. I'm going to seek inspiration with it. I'm going to explore with it. I'm going to plan and goal set and problem solve with it. Yes, it's going to be painful. Yes, it's going to be difficult and uncomfortable until I get that first impression. When that idea comes, it's going to ignite your passion. And then you're going to act on it, and it's going to turn out to be really cool. And then you get another one. and another one, and it gets sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. But just know there is atrophy in this muscle, atrophy from non-use. It's been used so destructively, you're now going to rechannel that gift to constructive. Plan on it being that way. It might be that way for several months. That's why we tell people this, that of the five mental exercises you can engage in, the one you'll get the most immediate results from to assist you in feeling the joy is the second one, inspiration. If there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path, and I will serve them. If there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path, and I will serve them. If you actually focused on that every day, I've got a number of coaching clients somewhere on this call. We've had just an amazing couple of weeks where people have had some experiences. We heard Rita talk about this on the airplane when she's walking into the window seat and had to pass the aisle, and she asked the woman how she was doing. Remember this conversation? And she said, "Oh, I'm doing okay, I guess." She sat down and says, "Oh, that was a door. I need to step into that door. Oh, I'm tired. I want to sleep. I've got 2.5 hours. I'm just exhausted." And then she said, if you remember the conversation, "I said, if there's anyone I would serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. Is this the one I'm supposed to serve?" I just got off a coaching call with an amazing human being back in New Hampshire. Actually, Massachusetts, but close to New Hampshire. Just a huge Og fan. Who's been applying these principles. This Sunday she went shopping. She went to a store. She's getting some women apparel. And that morning she started with, "Is anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them." She walks into the store and she asked this lady who seemed somewhat preoccupied if she could help her, and so she started to assist her. Well, she went into the changing room to change, and she was talking to the woman while she's there, and she had this thought, "This is the one. This is the one. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. I don't know why. I just know this is the one." And she comes out and stands with this lady and just makes herself available. She says, "I can't even remember exactly what I said." But within moments, the woman was telling her that her husband had left her and just took up residency with her best friend. And she was devastated. And this kind woman spent an hour and 15 minutes in the store just listening and stepping into her world. And there was a moment when she was able to share, "You know, truth is nobody cares. I care right now, but the truth is the world doesn't care." "How long's it been?" "7 months." "Is it time to move on?" She said, "Oh, yeah." She said, "I've lost 60 pounds. And she said she was beautiful. She really was beautiful. But by the time she left, she had the woman embracing her own beauty and her independence, and her need to show up for her two small children, and to start taking on life differently. I can only imagine where that woman is today, because somebody cared enough to say, "If there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path, and I'll serve them." That's the one exercise of all that can help you get in touch with a divinely inspired impression the fastest. So if you really want to exercise this muscle, you may want to keep crashing down in the bottle pit. You may like it down there. And you may want to wallow in that mud some more. Just know that you do, you'll never create. You'll just always get the same stuff you've always been getting. But if you want to create, this is one place where you can do it and connect very quickly with that power greater than yourself in the service of another person, that when you start asking this and you bring your life experiences to the service of another, you will be inspired. And you get an inspired impression, and when you act on it, she said to me, "Unai," she says, "I was walking out of the store, David, and I haven't felt that happy for a long time. I was feeling happy." Isn't that cool? Her soul was filled by stepping into someone's world and being available. It didn't deplete her, it filled her. And how many on this phone would like a little hole filled in their soul? Try that piece. If you work that one, then you'll get more courage to do mental rehearsal, then maybe exploration, and eventually goal setting and planning in that same environment. And you'll continue to have inspired ideas and impressions and solutions to problems that will ignite your passion and drive your focus, discipline, effort, and action. That's the easiest one, so start there. Okay, Lincoln.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. One of the things that I know I struggle with...
Let me ask that question, Lincoln. Pause. Mm-hmm. You were asking me a question a moment ago about sometimes it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Would you be willing this week, since everyone's listening, to apply that one particular mental exercise and come back next Tuesday night and share a couple of moments where you felt impressed, stepped into somebody's world, and served them?
Sure.
Would you do that?
I will.
Okay. And those on the phone, do this. And if you want to share, just let us know that you want to share. Come on the line, send us an email. Let's actually do this one practically in our real lives. In those pivotal moments where we're going to slide off to the left, say, I'm not going there today, not going there. I need to pick a constructive mental exercise. That one I know I can do. That one I understand. There's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. See if you can't create an actual experience this year, this week. Okay, go ahead.
If I can just interject a thought for a moment.
Yes, is this Harvey?
Yes, good evening.
Hi, Harvey.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think not that there can't be some stretch for Lincoln with this, but he really does a great job of that all the time. But I want him to hear me say it.
Thanks, Harvey. It's interesting that you would say that, because one of my next question, Dave, has to do with, I think, one of the big, I don't know if I want to call it a paralyzing factor or one of the easy pieces of ice to make it easy for me to slip that into there, is the idea that I have to do things right. The first, sometimes when you talk, I hear a lot of the things you say and I think I get it in my mind, but then I sometimes am afraid to put it into practice, because what if I get it wrong? What if I say the wrong thing, or what if I talk to the wrong person in the wrong way? And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about, or have you talk a little bit about, you've helped me understand, it is awkward at first, but sometimes that awkwardness is coming from, I don't want to do this.
Or it comes from our own internal dialogue about ourselves. I think we were best taught by Therese last Tuesday night. I called her after our call to get the rest of that story. I was so deeply moved by what she shared with us, those of you who are on the call, especially when she was meeting with her two friends there while her children were in gymnastics, and that feeling that with 50 other people around, they felt like they're the only people talking and stepping into the world of these people. And she said something, I'm not sure she said it on the call, and Therese, if you're on the call, I hope I'm not breaking any confidence by making this statement. Because I had her explain to me, she said, the questions flowed out of my own experience. In other words, the ease with which the questions come is in direct relationship to just how much we truly are connected with the other person. The more we can let go of our baggage, the more we can let go of our agenda and truly show up for that person. She said it was like an out-of-body experience. Showing up for that person, truly listening, wanting to serve this person and not fix them, just listen. And the questions flowed. I just love that. Isn't that awesome? Just flowed out of her experience. She got to, and she's been working on this for a few weeks, so don't be discouraged if you haven't had that experience yet. She got to that point that within a power session, being really focused in it, that just flowed out of her experience, and it can out of yours too. If you're getting in a conversation and you're going, oh, I don't know what to say, or gosh, what would Dave say, or what would Harvey say, or you know, what would Lincoln say, or just take a big deep breath, very practical, and just say, I'm just listening. And listen until a question comes out of your experience. If it doesn't, maybe there's not supposed to be one. Maybe you're supposed to just listen. Rita said to us, magic, her experience was in the silence. Therese told me the same thing. The gift she gave was in the silence. It wasn't in the answers to questions. It wasn't in even asking questions. It was the being available. Just being a safe place, like we talked last week about being that pillow. So we know if we still have dialogue going on about ourselves, if we're running into those brain cramps in the middle of connection, It's just saying, okay, I haven't quite let go of my own stuff. Let me just take a big deep breath. Okay, I'm just listening. Share with me. Help me understand that just a little bit better. Okay, good. And don't feel obligated to come up with something wise or some profound question. The gift is in just being available. That's the gift. Maybe the question could take you deeper. It's possible. But that's not the gift. The gift is just being available. Okay, Lincoln.
I appreciate you taking time to answer these questions, and I know...
I want to say one more thing about that, Lincoln. May I? I'm sorry to interrupt you. I was just thinking about a coaching call this week. Someone who's in the network marketing business and having a struggle with this connection issue because she's not a hammer. She just can't tear people down and commit them and put them up against the wall and slap them a few times. She's just not that kind of person. She wants to connect with people. And having this struggle, she says, what can I do? And I said, I got an idea. I want to give you permission not to market your product for a week. She says, but I got the end of the month tomorrow. This is on Monday, and I need to get so much more to get my PV up and get qualified, and I got next month. And I said, you know, it's interesting. We're waiting to the last day of the month, to work on this. This is our second coaching session. I said, this is not a good time to be trying to figure out how to solve this problem. Why don't we start with December? Let's solve December's problem. Now, I knew she was going to figure out how to solve November's problem. But I wanted to say, I want to give you permission to not market your product for a week. She says, I don't get it. Help me understand this. I said, the problem right now is that in practical application of intrinsic validation, no matter what you're trying to tell yourself, you're still bringing an agenda to the conversation. You still want, like heck, to just recruit them in the business, sign them up, and get them to buy your product. That's really what you want. She says, yeah, that's true. That's really what I want. Then stop doing it. Just make a commitment this week to show up in people's lives and serve them. I said, I remember doing this with a client up in Idaho Falls. I said, I gave him a month. I said, for the next month, you're not going to market your product. I want to give you permission not to do it. Really? Wow. Yeah. That very week, he came back and reported that he'd gone to a Chamber of Commerce dinner. He's sitting around the table, totally free of his agenda, just came to the meeting. And they were going around the table, what do you do? And he shared what he did. And he turned to the next person. And before that person could respond, the person said, well, tell me more about that. And before he knew it, he had the whole table surrounded with him as he was explaining in more detail what he was doing. I said, what was the difference? He said, I had no agenda. And for some reason, it made it attractive. He'd done that 100 times before, told people what he did, and they couldn't wait to get to the next guy and get past him. They did not want to hear his pitch. They could feel it coming. It leaked out all over his face. They knew what he was going to try to do. But when he let go of his agenda, totally let go of it, and he was just there to serve and love people, they wanted to know. So I told her this week, I'll give you a week's permission not to do anything. That's going to be very fun next Monday in her coaching session to find out how many more conversations, deep conversations, she had about her products because she was showing up in the service of people instead of just trying to recruit them into her business. What a novel concept. Find people who need what you have instead of trying to get everybody to just buy what you have. Oh, thanks, Lincoln. Sorry.
No, that's okay. That kind of leads me to my next question, which is, you know, I'm not in network marketing. I'm working with you in managing and growing a business. And sometimes I feel like, you know, how I'm not out there creating sales. That's not my role. It's not my responsibility. What can I do inside the business? What are some practical application of what we talk about or what you teach that I can apply in a business setting?
Many of you on the phone have jobs, even if you're in another business, home-based business. And a lot of us are not being fully committed. This person may be on the line tonight, and I know she'll be listening to this, and just had a marvelous conversation with her today. it just tingles up and down my spine as she was talking about making an absolute 100% commitment to her employer, because she really hadn't been. She'd been talking about being stuck in a windowless cubicle. That's how she viewed her job, being stuck in a windowless cubicle. And she started showing up 100% in her job, doing things that she hadn't even considered doing, because her mind was in resistance and rebellion and frustration, and there was issues with the owner, and there was issues with this person, issues with that person. And all of a sudden, she just let all the issues go, and she showed up to really bring her gifts and talents to the workplace during the time that she was there. I can tell you what happened yesterday. She said, as I showed up, it's like the universe is showing up. The owner of the company called her into his office and said, "What are you putting on your face?" She says, "I don't understand what you mean. What are you putting on your face?" "Nothing." "Well, how come it's glowing?" He wasn't being facetious. He really wanted to know. And she said, "Well, I've been studying these principles." And he says, "Well, tell me more about that." And she said, "I will in a couple weeks." She wants to have that whole office go through this experience. It was discernible. Her change in her presence was so discernible. The owner of the company is asking her if she's putting some kind of special lotion on her face. Now, I know some of you represent some lotion that might actually cause a glow. That's great. But she wasn't even using that and was having that kind of an experience. She came in and started thinking about a client that was having a problem. And she was mentally rehearsing this client's challenge, and she saw middle management trying to share something with management. And she saw a document. And she began to see what was in the document, and what order it was in, and how it would look, and how it would answer each one of their questions sequentially. And she was preparing it just before our coaching session. She was so excited because she knew in her heart, she felt the impression, she knew before she sent it, that this was going to be the answer to solving their problem. Something she wouldn't have done if she weren't 100% committed. She'd have been going through the motions of the day, doing what was necessary to kind of get things going. So when we shut off this noise and we bring these principles to the workplace and we're really mentally rehearsing how to solve a problem, and we're seeking inspiration of who we could serve, and we're exploring possibilities, and we're planning and goal setting and catching a vision for what we do at our desk. Why am I here? What could I do to take this business to a new level? Problem solving, stepping into people's worlds, taking down walls of resistance. Can you imagine the difference in a workplace if everybody were doing this? Yet we show up, and often we've got doubts and fears and anxieties of our own, and we're stuck on ourselves, and all of us can be there. But oh, when we start in the morning intentionally different, and we actually listen to a scroll, and we let it get inside our soul just a little bit, and we step into the office with that kind of a feeling. Weak is he who allows his thoughts to control his actions. Strong is he who forces his actions to control his thoughts. Trees and weather depend on the weather. Excuse me, trees and plants depend on the weather. Yea, I make my own weather. I bring it with me. If I bring rain and gloom and doom and pessimism, gosh, I'm not going to do that today. I'm going to bring sunshine, but I don't feel like sunshine. Then I'm going to think differently, get different chemicals released in my body so that I can feel differently. I'm going to actually change the way I'm feeling. I'm being true to myself. And we make a shift consciously in the workplace. We can do that if we're employees. We can do it effectively if we use our thought processes and creation if we're the owners and managers. We can do it in our independent home businesses. These are the little teeny pivotal moments, those little decision points, where either we're going to take control or we're going to let our thoughts be in control. We're either going to be in partnership with that power or we're going to be snorkeling in our manure. Those are our moments of choice. And success, which we so hunger for, is nothing more than a series of those little pivotal moments successfully executed. That's all it is. It's nothing more. It's not any more complicated than that. That's what you do in the workplace. Those are very specific things when you're looking at a project. How many of you have got a project at the office that is so overwhelming that it's like this big ugly that you just keep putting off? And someday someone's going to ask you about it, and you're going to have to report why it's not done. Well, what would you happen if you listened to completing tasks, studied power sessions, and discovered that one of the things you can do with a power session is take that project, break it into bite-sized pieces, 1 hour a day, planned over 5 days, and instead of beating yourself up every day for the whole thing not being done, you get to have a sense of accomplishment for the 1 hour you did do and the thing that was done without any concern about what's going to be done because it hasn't come yet. The next day, you sit down and do the next piece. Sense of accomplishment. Next day, sense of accomplishment. At the end of the week, the whole big ugly's done. Tremendous sense of accomplishment. And if you've read or listened to self-esteem, you'll know that one of the great ways to heal your self-esteem is through a sense of accomplishment from taking action. So if you got any big uglies at work, you got any big uglies at home, take them this week and break them into bite-sized pieces. Plan 1 hour a day. What could be done in this hour? Do that piece and you're done. Accomplishment. Next day, do that piece, you're done. Accomplishment. You'll feel better about yourself versus beating yourself up for this 5 hour thing you never can have enough time to block out. There's too much going on in your life. There's hardly a project that can't be broken down into bite-sized pieces. Hardly a project. I'm sure there's probably an example, an exception, but almost everyone can. That's an application of what can be done in the workplace using these principles. Let's move to the next question because we could keep going on that one.
Well, I appreciate that. You indicated in your answer that you can shift the way you feel. And one of the things that you've taught me over the last year is a very scientific method for why we feel certain things in our lives. The chemical reactions that are going on in our bodies because of what's going on in our heads and the thoughts that we have. And I just wanted to see if you could spend just a few moments, I know we're running shorter on time, exploring how I can monitor, because I'm doing this, a lot of us are doing this alone, kind of out, we're on these calls every week, but then we have 6 days between calls, or 7 days between calls, where, you know, it's easy to kind of get pumped up and say, I'm going to make this change, and then kind of we sag by the end of the week. And I just thought maybe there's a way we could learn to monitor ourselves, our own emotional state, and either know that this emotion should be shifted or would serve us to shift it, or this emotion is the right kind of emotion and this is the emotion I should nurture.
Yes.
Is there a way to describe that?
Yeah, I think so. And Og knew this in 1968, Candace Pert in the 70s and 80s and 90s, Molecules of Emotion, great book, was discovering the fact that our emotions, how we feel, are driven by the release of chemicals, ligands, neuropeptides, in our body. Where she didn't quite connect, and Og did, is that our thoughts are driving those emotions. So our thoughts, such as fear, causes the release of fear dendrites from the amygdala, our fight-or-flight center, shuts down our empathy, practical judgment. Our body, our sympathetic nervous system, then releases cortisol and adrenaline to help protect us from this enemy that's attacking. We feel that anxiety. Our intuition, then, and this is a key for almost everybody on the phone. Everybody here, almost everybody's got a very high intuition. One of the key places to look on your assessment is empathetic, the first measurement on the left-hand side. A very key place. We look at empathetic and then look at compassionate down at the bottom and see where those are. If they're teal or a light green, you're going, wow, pretty good intuition. Well, that intuition reads that feeling in the cells of our body and says something's wrong. Because it feels. It appears real. It does appear real. It's not in our mind. This is a physical reality of this feeling. And so we have false evidence from this thought process, this anger or frustration caused a chemical release, and now we're feeling a very real feeling. But it's false evidence appearing real, this fear that we're experiencing. And one of the dilemmas we face in society is being true to ourselves, true to our feelings. Am I just burying my feelings by ignoring that? And I want us to really pause for a moment and say, oh my goodness, if the feeling I'm having is real, but it was caused by a chemical reaction from a thought process that's out of balance, that's inappropriate. How can I give credence to the feeling? That's really bizarre. And I think that's what Aug is trying to tell us. We wake up in a different mood every day. One of the tricks of nature. We could have a dream in the middle of the night that causes a chemical release that makes us feel a certain way. We could go to bed thinking about something glorious to have reality show up differently and be in an amygdala hijack. We could be worrying about something when we go to sleep and have this residual in the morning. That's not flu, it's just we don't feel good. We feel tired, we feel anxious, we feel fearful, we feel frightened. And the point being that... Okay, so what? So what? Weak is he who allows these thoughts to control his actions. And you can add, even if they cause chemicals that make you feel bad. Strong is he who forces his actions to control his thoughts. And the first thought is, I'm going to think differently. Even in that midst, you go, wow, it's going to take a little while for those fear dendrites to drain off and a little bit for that cortisol to drain off. I'm going to choose to think differently. I'm going to choose to have the best day of my life, even if I'm not feeling like it. I'm going to consciously make that choice. Now, that's one option. And if we think differently, different chemicals released, different ligands, neuropeptides, different feeling. We actually can shift the way we feel by thinking constructively. Now, if that's not enough, Aug has given us a whole list of other things we can do. We can sing a song. We can go buy a new set of clothing. We can do all kinds of things, actions, that break us out of this thinking pattern that's created this chemical release that creates this emotion, this feeling. So don't get stuck on the feeling. Because for the majority of those on the telephone, the majority of the time, when we're feeling awful, it has nothing to do with what's real. It has everything to do with a thought process. Catastrophizing, worrying, fearful, as Aug says, tormenting myself over things that may never come to pass, or beating myself up over things that I've done in the past and having guilt and shame around it, all this kind of crap going on that's causing me to feel this way. We're not ignoring our feelings. We are changing an inappropriate feeling from an inaccurate thought process. This is something we have the power to do, and it is incredibly powerful to know that we can do it. However, this thought process doesn't want to go away quickly. Oh, but I feel awful, and we want people to feel sorry for us, and we want to be the victim. And I'm not talking about real loss. If someone loses a spouse or a child, there's a mourning process, and it's critical that we go through the stages of mourning. We're not talking about that. We're talking about that stuff we've been wallowing around in because somebody took a credit card away from us because we charged it to the hilt. Or we lost our home because we didn't manage that home equity line appropriately. Or we lost a job some time ago, and we're still lamenting the fact that we're in a new one that has lower pay. Instead of seeing how many people still don't have one at all, we just wallow and wallow. Instead, we decide to change our thought process. We let go of our victimhood. It is heavy. It is burdensome. It is crushing us. It is keeping us from being successful. It is creating chemical releases in our body that are destroying our cells and making us feel awful. There is no good to come out of that kind of lamentation. So we choose to think differently, or we take an action that can break us out of that pattern. Get a different chemical release, get a different feeling. And we go, wow, I feel really good. And sometimes, frankly, we don't want to feel better. Because if I feel better, who's going to feel sorry for me? If I walk in and I'm feeling great, well, nobody's going to say, well, gosh, you're really working hard. We appreciate all you're doing. It's like, maybe I need to give him more work. He doesn't look tired enough yet. We've got all kinds of dialogue going on in our heads about why we can't be happy. However, when anybody in our life is moping around and being a victim, there isn't a person on this phone who doesn't want to stick their finger down their throat and vomit. They suck the energy out of us, they drain us, they exhaust us. And the truth of the matter is, when we're there, we're doing exactly the same thing to people. We are not getting their pity. We're getting their disgust, even if it's behind our back. So let us make the conscious choice to change it. Thinking differently, or taking a different action. Those are two actions, an action of thinking differently or an action of something physical to shift the chemical, shift the feeling.
You know, it's just to share an experience and to add to that discussion, Dave. As you know, this week I faced a very difficult situation in the business. And I remember we talked about it prior to that, and I was filled with all the wrong kinds of feelings because it was an uncomfortable situation for me to be in. And yet, knowing that that was part of my responsibility, I just took the bull by the horns and did it. And afterwards, you called me afterwards to see how it had gone, and I appreciate that you did that. And I just remember feeling so clean. It was a difficult thing to do, but if it was the right thing to do, based on what we, you know, the things we had discovered. And I just wanted to also clarify that sometimes those big uglies, as you call them, if we just do them, we feel clean inside. And that's, for me, that was a sign I made the right choice. I was in creation doing the right thing. It was a scary thing. It was an intimidating thing. But I went and did it. And afterwards, I just had a sense of clean. I was the right thing.
And so proud of you for taking care of it as well as you did. And I remember that feeling when I called you and you said this was the right thing. If there was any regret that it wasn't done sooner, that was interesting, which is almost always the case when we're facing a big ugly and we finally take it on. There's a sense of accomplishment, but what comes with it is also, wow, why did I wait so long? It's just a great thing to discover. Yes.
Yeah.
Way to be.
Yep. And the final thing I thought would be good for the call tonight, Dave, is you had shared with me earlier today a story with your partner in the alcohol recovery program.
Oh, yes.
That it happened to him over this weekend. I don't know if there's time now to share that story or not, but if so,
I think there may be. It's just another validation of how things work. Neil shared this story with me last night. Neil is the president of the New Life Academy, as in today I begin a new life. She's using Ogmandino's principles in an online alcohol recovery program. It's got a therapeutic element. It's just a powerful, wonderful thing. It's going to be released about the 7th of January. That's what we're looking for right now. Very excited if anybody here has anyone in their life that is struggling with alcoholism. This will be a powerful, powerful tool for them to consider where they can work on their recovery in the sanctity of their home without leaving their job and going to a recovery center, etc. Neil was telling me that we just had our in-state rivalries. Almost everybody in the nation did. And our in-state rivalries here in Utah is BYU and the University of Utah, two very different schools. And it's a battle. And this year is being fought down at LaBelle Edwards Stadium down there with BYU. And Neil said, I've been to every home game for Utah. And every Utah-BYU game, whether here or at LaBelle Edwards Stadium, since he was 6 years old. That's quite a... And he's like 39. And something in that neighborhood. And it was his brother's turn to buy the tickets, and his brother forgot to. So his brother's out trying to find tickets from a scalper. And Neil had been dating this woman whose father was a BYU fan and had seats there in the booster section on the west side, which is the premier location in the state. Could you call your dad and see if he knows anybody who's got season tickets that they might be willing to sell them? So she called, and she's a University of Utah fan. That's where she went. So these two University of Utah fans, she's calling her dad. And before he can get back to her, he has a dream one night that he sees Neil and Kristen at the stadium in his seats. So he said to Kristen, I want to give you my tickets. I don't know why, but I'm supposed to give you my tickets. He just felt inspired, impressed. So Neil and Kristen show up to the game. They're in the – anybody's got a rivalry team, you know what this is like. There's two red people in this sea of blue, and they're right in the middle of them. And every time something happens, Neil jumps to his feet and cheers, and Kristen jumps to his feet, and somebody in the back taps him on the shoulder and says, sit down. He says at the University of Utah, everybody stands the whole game. At BYU, everybody sits down the whole game. He's wondering, what is the deal here? Kristen's dad felt impressed to have us sit in these seats, and all I'm doing is getting poked in the back by somebody who can't see. So just before halftime, texted his brothers and said, are there any seats over there? They've got seats. They were down in the nosebleed section behind the goalposts. Said, are there any seats over there? And he said, yeah, there's two right next to us. and nobody showed up. And he says, well, if they don't show up by halftime, we're going to come down there. Well, he checked in just before halftime again. Nobody was there, so they decided to go down and sit over in those seats. As they went down the steps and went underneath the stadium to get over to that other section, Neil noticed this woman and said, Kristen, isn't that your sister-in-law? She said, yeah. And they went over there, and it was Karen. Karen, how you doing? And they hugged, and it was just a wonderful reunion. And they said goodbye, and they went and took their seats up there in the nosebleed section, and they're sitting there, and a few minutes later, they noticed Karen walking up into the same section, and then she sat down next to her husband. Now, here's the story. Her husband had been estranged from the family. This is Kristen's brother. She had not seen him for a couple years. And you can imagine how it felt for her to finally see her brother. They were from Boise, Idaho. This is in Provo, Utah. She leapt from her seat, ran full sprint, got down there, and there was a reunion that was so sweet that Neil said the whole section was engrossed by watching them instead of the game. It was that sweet. Then they went for a walk and talked for the next quarter and a half. Kristen finally worked her way back up to the seats with Neil, and Neil said, how was that? I said, oh, it was amazing. He's agreed to come tomorrow to dinner at the house with the family. Hasn't been there for years. He said, what caused his estrangement from the family? She said, it started with his alcohol drinking. And Neil got this tingle down his spine. Kristen invited him to come the next day to the dinner, and he did. And there he's sitting at the dinner. This is the son of the man who had the impression to give Neil his tickets. Sitting there with his son he hasn't seen in a couple of years. And the son asked Neil what he's doing. And he said, I'm putting together an alcohol recovery program with Og Mandino Group. And he said, well, share with me what you're doing. So he told him about the program. And when he got done, the son of the father who had the impression to give away the tickets said, count me in. I'm ready to stop drinking. My promise to everybody on this phone, if you apply these principles, trust them, seek to serve people, mentally rehearse before you get there and see what kind of impressions you get, then act on them. If there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. Get an impression, act on it. Step into people's worlds and let go of your agenda and your baggage and really show up to serve them. Find out what's really going on and connect with them. The promise is that very power will put people on your path who can serve you and who you can serve. And the joy you will feel will be unspeakable. And it's not just joy. Because you want to generate revenue, your business will flourish. It will flourish if you're willing to surrender to the principles. That was the story, the true story, Lincoln.
Thank you. I was as moved tonight as I was this morning when you shared it with me earlier. I appreciate you doing that again. Well, Dave, I certainly appreciate every week you get on this call. I know how much you, the burden you feel every week to provide something of extreme value. I think that it would be good to explore this idea of the practical application of these principles. If you're comfortable with that, continue to explore that. I especially like the idea of the emotional piece, because I think there's a feeling that comes when we do what's right, if you will, when we're applying these principles, that we know that we're doing the right thing, and we don't have to feel uncomfortable or awkward, and I think that's, for me, that's something that would be very helpful if we could continue doing that.
Okay. I thank you for taking us in this direction tonight, Lincoln. Very much. And for everybody that's here, let's have a great week.
Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome, and thanks, everybody. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Thank you, Dave.
Bye-bye.